It is such a beautiful late afternoon here in Moscow. Really incredible. It's been sunny all day long, and all the Muscovites, and in fact, most of the people of Russia are out on the streets. That's our studio. We're coming to you right from the Kremlin, as a matter of fact. It's a beautiful place. In fact, if you look at some of the pictures of the people down there, you're going to see that many of them are smiling on this day, not just because it's a beautiful day and people in Russia are normally out with their families at the cafes, going out, especially in this city. No crime, no issues, no homeless, no drug problems. It's kind of a unique place in that way. But they've got a little skip in their step on this day. They might have a little bit of a smile. And there's a reason for that, because this war with Ukraine that's been going on for so long, this might be the beginning of the end because of some of the news that's coming in. It's good news for the people of Russia, eventually good news for the people of Ukraine as well. And I'm going to tell you all about it. As a matter of fact, this is the Sanchez Effect, where we do such things. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And tonight, the Russian army, here's the news, they're celebrating. They're celebrating one of, if not possibly the most important victory since the war in Ukraine began. Yes, the Russian military has captured the city of Chasiv Yar, which for the Ukrainians was, or I should say for the Ukrainian army, it was a very pivotal stronghold. So why is this so important militarily? Okay, so Chasiv Yar is Ukraine's most fortified position in Donbas. Thousands of members of Ukraine's armed forces were defending it. Now they've all been captured or killed or they've run off. So let me get a map up so I can describe to you why Chasiv Yar is so important. So it's situated on elevated ground with roadways that lead both in and out and make it a key supply route, obviously, and also a key logistical hub. So in other words, it feeds the rest of the military. Control of this city gives the Russians even more artillery dominance as they march toward Kramatorsk and Slavyansk, and eventually, of course, the granddaddy of them all, Pokrovsk. In fact, all three targets now seem inevitable. And that's why Russian officials are saying this fall of Chasiv Yar essentially leads to the collapse of the Ukrainian defenses in the region. That's what they're saying. That's the word from Russia. Now, what's the word from Ukraine? Well, few military officials on either side would argue with that assessment, but somehow the Ukrainians are. They're saying that the story is being carried by the press, and they admit it, and media accounts all over the world, with all of them spelling out that the news is a major victory for the Russian military. Well, it's a horrible defeat and a sign of worse things to come for the Ukraine defense forces. So here's the reaction from the Ukraine officials. They say it's a hoax. That's it. That's the only comment that they've made so far, which seems kind of bizarre, right? That's all that they're saying, at least from Kiev at this point, though we'll obviously continue to monitor it. So, but here's a question that we have to ask as we watch this story unfold, and in fact, some of the others that I've told you about. Ask yourself this. How is it that the Russian army can capture so many cities, as we've been reporting, and those of you who've been following this have been seeing? How can they capture so many cities with such astonishingly low numbers of casualties, right? I mean, compared to other wars, compared to what's going on in Gaza, for example? Well, the answer to that is kind of simple. Most of these towns that the Russians are arriving in, the Russian army, are deserted before they get there. Civilians aren't there. People aren't living there. Only soldiers from the Ukraine side. The people, with few exceptions, they've left. All that's left is the Ukrainian soldiers and the men hired or recruited by the Ukrainian military in those places. So that's the situation on the ground. But that's a truth that will likely be ignored, as you probably know, by many Western journalists. Well, because it doesn't fit their narrative. You see, they want you to think that the war is really a civilian bloodbath, even though the numbers show that it isn't. For example, when they report of like a bombed building, they will purposely leave out the fact that the building was vacant, right? They won't say there were people there, but they won't say that there weren't people there. I want to give you an example of this. Okay, so here. This is Colin Robertson. He's a young man with a YouTube channel and an admitted pro-Kiev bias who reports from the war in Kiev. Now, this perfectly coiffed influencer calls himself a journalist. I'm going to let you decide. His latest headline got my attention, right? It's one where he seems to go against his usual false narrative that he and others have long been feeding to Western news consumers that somehow, you've heard it, where they keep saying Ukraine is winning the war. They're destroying Russia's military. As a matter of fact, that's it. His headline. I've got bad news from the front lines, he's saying in his headlines. Interesting. Okay, so now I'm going to show you some of his report. We're going to watch it together, you and I, okay? He files his report from a place called Dobrobilia. It's a city that's now abandoned, by the way. It's likely going to be soon taken as well by the Russian army. It's in line, right? As the Russian army works its way toward Pokrovsk. Watch what he does here. I want you to listen and watch what he does here in his reporting.
Not only is this street now completely obliterated by a Russian glide bomb, but the entire city is deserted. I cannot describe how busy this was last time I was here. And they put that bomb right into the center of this city, right into the center.
You see what he's doing right there? You see what he did? He tells you they put a glide bomb right in the city center. He doesn't tell you that the place where it hit was abandoned, right? He doesn't tell you that it was already evacuated before the glide bomb hit, right? He's making it sound like, well, now it's empty, but when the glide bomb hit, a bunch of people, he's leaving that impression. So the truth is the Russians were actually hitting probably some Ukraine soldiers who were still in the city, who were defending the town after the people had left. Or maybe the Russians just hit an empty building, which is very likely as well. We don't know yet. But he wants you to think that the Russians attacked a building with hundreds, if not thousands of people in it, civilians. I see this all the time. Listen again here how he tries to fool you. Listen to his words.
They put that bomb right into the center of this city, right into the center.
So right into the center, right? So what's interesting about his reporting, complete with soft piano music in the background, you know, is that he later admits, and I guess he forgot, that the town was abandoned. It appears he couldn't remember his own misstatement. Here it is.
So here we are right in the center, and look, I'm the only person here in a lovely afternoon.
So he's the only person there. There's nobody in the town. But then he tells you something else. So there's, there he is telling us that the town is empty. He's right in the center, and there's no one there. So why is he talking about a glide bomb that hit the center? Center of what? An empty town? Oh, maybe he forgot. See, what he's doing is called advocacy journalism. That's what I learned at the University of Minnesota School of Journalism. You see, I'm a real journalist. I'm not sure that he is. He's trying to leave the impression of something that didn't happen as a way of advocating for his side, right? He's representing Ukraine. But wait, this gets even worse, right? And I'm going to show you, because he's now going to tell you that what the people who aren't there, follow me here, he's going to tell you what the people who aren't there would say to him if they were there.
Locals here are nervous. I just tried to speak to a few different people, and no one wants to speak because they're terrified. They're terrified that if the Russians come, then they'll be tortured for maybe speaking to media. They're terrified of all of this.
So how can he know what the people who aren't there would say if they were there? He's quoting people who don't exist. And where's the evidence of the torture, by the way? I mean, this is crazy. He's walking around saying there's nobody here to talk to. But if they were here, there's a possibility they might tell me that they're afraid they might be tortured. What the hell does that even mean? I mean, again, you see what he's doing here? Let's continue. Now I'm going to show you some footage here before I show you the soundbite, because this is important. In this scene, in the footage you're seeing, he's about to describe this very large military man looking dude. He's just a simple shopkeeper, he's going to tell you, who chose to stay behind when the whole town left, right? But as you can see in the video behind him, the shelves are packed with groceries. There are military guys walking all around carrying supplies, and there's no cash registers, right? You see, the real story is quite obvious. This store has obviously been, this is normal. Military do this all the time. This store has been converted to a military canteen. And this so-called shopkeeper is likely a member of the Ukraine military. Or he was recruited by the Ukraine military to operate their supply store. But again, listen to how he describes him.
With the city almost emptied out, there's almost no one to speak to us, except one shopkeeper who's kept his business open.
So what, are we stupid? Does this even make any sense? There's no one left in the town, but the shelves are completely full with groceries. This isn't reporting. What he's doing is creating a false narrative. It's what Western journalists are prone to do, which is, by the way, what they often accuse others of doing. Here's another lie. So the so-called shopkeeper, who looks like he's, you know, 6'7" military dude, he's just a little shopkeeper, an old guy, right? He apparently is aligned with the military and stayed behind. Now look at how he describes his next interview. This guy's supposed to be just a simple volunteer who decided he was going to stay and help the military there, or found his way there to help the Ukrainian military. Really? Let's listen.
I hear buzzing outside and ask the volunteers what they heard.
You just saw a drone?
He's been circling and took a dive right now. Yeah, yeah, yep. This is pretty much a ghost town. And
when's the last time you had an instinct like this?
Afghanistan, right before we got shot.
Did he just say in Afghanistan before we got... So this local volunteer just out trying to help the Ukrainian military turns out to be a guy who fought in Afghanistan and has what sounds like a suspiciously very Western accent, possibly some American dude from Chicago or something. Just a local volunteer. Really? If you get a sense that you're being gaslit when you watch this guy's report like I did, guess what? You are. This story is so filled with lies, I don't know where to grab the next one. And by the way, being gaslit, so are the tens of millions of people who are subjected to this type of reporting on a daily basis all over the United States, and especially in places like the UK and France and Germany. In fact, oftentimes, reporters like these are actually paid by government agencies like USAID and NGO. They recruit these guys, and they have direct ties, these agencies, or are run by MI6, and the CIA. I thought you should know that, because that's something that you're not supposed to know about. Don't tell anybody, okay? But now you know. Hey, speaking of UK, speaking of France, speaking of Germany, so what's really happening in those countries? See, leaders in those countries are constantly looking down their noses at China and Iran and Russia and India and Brazil and half the countries in the world, if not more. I could go on and on. But how are things going for them? How are things going, for example, in those countries? Why are so many people from those countries, you know, the UK, France, other parts of Europe, why are they saying they want to leave and they don't want to live there anymore? Listen to this.
The challenge right now is that the UK is broken. It's done. The reason why 10,800 millionaires, one every 45 minutes, is leaving the UK is because they realize that we're currently in a desert.
Public services are absolutely shit. There's dog shit everywhere. I just don't know where my money's going is the problem.
The tax in the UK, the tax is ridiculous. Everything is expensive, and that's, I guess, one of the main reasons why people do leave.
The cost of living is absolutely crazy now.
Like, well, if you make more money, mate, we have to take that money away and you have to work more for to get less.
High taxes have plagued France for many years. France, a country that's part of the European Union, is also one of the highest taxed countries inside the EU.
I can only imagine one thing. This chancellor is known as the BlackRock chancellor, and I truly believe he's profiting from it, albeit discreetly. Freedom of opinion is always a tricky thing. Sure, you can have an opinion, but in this system, you shouldn't say it out loud. That's how it goes. We were also in Berlin and protested against Merz. I can tell you that over 13 million people in Germany are not happy with this man.
I couldn't articulate it better. However, I can present facts that clearly show things are going awry. The government needs to find a solution. As an ordinary citizen, I recognize these issues, which is why I'm taking action.
And we're joined now by somebody who understands that conversation that people were having there. Thomas Roper is an author. He's a war correspondent. What the hell hasn't this guy done? I mean, you've been in this business for a long time. And so what we like to do on Thursdays is get people like yourself, people who share my experience. I've been at this for a while myself as a journalist, asking questions all over the world. And you're one of those guys who's terribly inquisitive about these things. But the reason I wanted to talk to you here today is because I want to better understand what I just heard those people saying. Those people were all saying, I live in France and I can't stand it here anymore. I'm going to get the hell out. I live in Germany and I don't like Germany anymore. Inflation, taxes, my pension's going away, crime, the things I see on the streets. They're all, whether it's UK or France or Germany or, you know, pick your European country. We hear people saying this all the time. So my question to you, what the hell's going on?
Well, they somehow destroyed Europe. At least after 2015, when they opened the borders for all these migrants, things really changed. I was, in this time, several times in Germany, and I've seen it. I've seen how the cities became dirty, graffiti. We have all these attacks with knives now in Germany. Just an example, it was even 6 years ago. I was last time in Munich on Oktoberfest with Russian friends. And we came right in the center of Munich, out of the metro, of the subway, and they were shocked. Center of Munich, everything in Arabic, everything dirty, everything everywhere graffiti, horrible. And when I have a friend, for example, from Switzerland is called one of the most clean countries in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
He came to Russia, to Petersburg and Moscow, and said, hey, it's so clean here. And I can walk in a park at night and I don't have to be afraid. No crime. So this is the thing that people see here and what's really getting worse there.
You know, it's funny. I mentioned that at the top here. My wife and I were traveling around last night. Mm-hmm. We went to dinner. And on the way back, she's visiting me from the States, and she was commenting on all you see is promenades, parks, open spaces, green spaces, people outside, people with family, people holding hands. No sign whatsoever of crime, no signs of serious graffiti, no signs of homelessness, no signs of drug addiction, a couple of drunks, but you know, I'm not talking about myself here. it was a good dinner though. But generally speaking, you know, Thomas, it's such a difference from those places. And yet it's funny to hear those places talk so badly about this place when you come to this place and you look at that place. It's an anthem, isn't it?
That reminds you on the Cold War, when Europe was divided and the East didn't let the people travel, not to see how it is in the West.
Right.
Now it's different. It's vice versa. They stopped flights to Russia, direct flights. They somehow closed many borders.
God, you're right.
They don't want the people to see it. I remember the
oh my God, I never put that together. That's an interesting thought.
It is.
People used to not be able to be let out of East Germany, so they were prevented from seeing what the world was really like. And now people in the West are prevented from seeing what the real world is really like.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to go to China. They're not allowed to go to Iran. They're not allowed to go to Russia or Cuba or Venezuela or a lot of other places.
They're somehow allowed, but it's very expensive to go to Russia. It was two hours flight before.
Yeah.
Now you have to fly via Turkey. It's a whole day and it's quite expensive, not many flights. So it became very, very expensive. Not many people can afford it. Then they get all this horror propaganda, how criminal Russia is. And then they're afraid. But people who
come here. And look at this. Hey, do me a favor, Gene or Dennis, Give me some shots from back here, if you could. I want to follow up on this. I want. Can you see it behind me? You can almost see behind me that the people. It's generally that. You know how when you can look at somebody and they look peaceful.
Yeah.
They don't look tense. Yeah. They don't look like they're wondering. They don't look like they're going to fight about whether Trump is good or Biden is good or this one. There's no political arguments.
This is a general point of Russia.
Yeah.
I was always asking Germany, how free are you somehow in Russia? How free can you talk? And I always say, much more free than the West, because it's not. In the West, everything is ideology.
Yeah.
If you don't have this opinion on LGBT or whatever, on climate change or whatever it is, people start ignoring you. They can even not invite you to a birthday party or whatever. Yeah. So this is what's happening in the West. And here I don't have it. I always tell this. I have two friends. They're quite dry, young, in their 30s. One is lesbian and one is homophobe. Mm-hmm. They're drinking beer together. Okay, in this topic, we will not agree. But you are a nice guy anyway. Let's have a beer. So this is the difference.
I have something I want to play. This is, Dennis and Boris, if you can cue this up. These are the people in Germany who are being shown videos of people being dragged off the streets of Kiev and forced to the front line, and they're showing the video to people in Germany, and they're reacting as they watch it. All right, let's it's about a minute long here. Let's take it. Go.
Wenn das wahr ist, ist das falsch und vermutlich verboten.
Dass das nicht hier wird ja China oder so die Richtung sein, oder Korea oder so?
Das
Nein.
Ist Nordkorea meinen Sie?
Ja.
Das ist Ukraine.
Ukraine ist das?
Ja.
Was da passiert, das ist schrecklich.
Das, man traut irgendwie seinen Augen kaum.
Das ist nicht demokratisch.
Ja, muss schon demokratisch bestimmt werden, das ist schon klar. Aber natürlich, wenn die Leute ausgehen, dann kann ich das auch verstehen, dass der Staat sagt, wir müssen ja unser Land verteidigen. Es ist eine ganz schwierige Frage.
Das ist scheiße. Was denken Sie darüber?
Furchtbar finde ich das, wirklich.
Aber das finde ich irgendwie unmenschlich.
Ja, das dürfte es überhaupt nicht geben, in keinster Weise. Und das finde ich ganz schlimm, dass wir die unterstützen.
So, for our audience that doesn't speak German, you obviously do because you're German. by the way, you don't have to speak German to understand what was happening there. And you're getting the gist that they're looking at this video and they're going, oh yeah, North Korea, what is this, Satan? Is this hell? What is this, you know? And everybody in this part of the world has seen that video many, many times, and all over the world, as a matter of fact. Why not in Germany?
Well, I saw it also in Germany, but in general, this news, how the recruiting in Ukraine is working, it's hidden by the German media. I was quite surprised that I saw at least one article in a newspaper where they are talking about, not really about this method of recruiting, but about the fact that Ukrainians are happy and applauding that Russia starts bombing these recruitment centers.
Yes.
Yeah, and the Ukrainians sent the GPS data that the Russians can hit them. And the thing is, the German newspaper was really shocked. How can this be? Ukraine, they are so motivated. Right. They want to fight Russia. And now this thing and was quite absurd article, but there also they mentioned somehow, there are some not popular recruiting methods. That's all they know. The Western media is doing it, again my what I said, like in the GDR, they said the people are in the desert of no knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the same. The Western media doesn't show what's happening.
You know, it's so funny you would say that. You know my background. You know where you know where I was born.
Yeah,
Cuba. So I was born in Cuba. Yeah. So I grew up in an environment during the worst of the most confusing times in Cuba when Castro was really in charge there. And there was a time when Cuba was a very repressive place where information was not allowed to get out. Some people would argue it did so as a reaction to the fact that they were afraid they were going to be bombed by the United States and that the United States had tried to assassinate Fidel Castro on many occasions. So you could look at it both ways. But either way, people in Cuba felt like they were repressed and they couldn't get information.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, one of the reasons I became a journalist is because I believe that people deserve to know and make up their own damn minds.
Yeah.
And never, Thomas, in a million years, did I ever think that I would live in a world where the country that I come from, the United States of America, or your country, Germany, would be the countries who would be repressing people's right to access information, share information, gather in places. The Biden administration has all but made it illegal for me to cover news in the United States if I'm in any way associated with Russia. But if I am associated with Germany or with UK or with France, then they'd roll out the red carpet and maybe pay me a little extra money.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, the thing is, if they have to lie, and if they have to, well, somehow close information, that means they have a problem. They don't have an argument. That's why I agree. I'm not a journalist, by the way, admitting I was in business. I started writing in 2018, thought it as a hobby, and then it became a job because the people wrote, read my site. So what's happening? I think that people have to know both points of view, and I think, well, this is democratic. The people have to need the chance to make their mind, and that's why they need the information. And that's the way.
I'm curious to hear you talk about this. Is the economic situation in Germany, for example, as bad as we hear? I mean, I know that your GDP, for example, is negative. I mean, Russia's is, last time I checked, I think 3.7 or 3.8, almost 4 points. That's pretty darn good considering a country that is completely, totally castigated by the West economically with sanctions and everything else you could name. Yep. Germany, which seems to have everything that you could have, all the help from the United States of America, relationship with the EU, apparently a lot of other attributes, and yet apparently they're according to reports, I want you to confirm this, it's tough living there, and the economy kind of sucks for the average person.
Yeah, that's what the people also tell me when I'm not allowed to go to Germany anymore, so I'm also under sanctions.
Right.
I'm the first European on the European sanction list, so forget about everything.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
You're sanctioned?
Yeah, I'm sanctioned.
How you personally are sanctioned?
I'm personally.
Your country sanctioned you?
Yes. No court, no nothing, no law, just...
So what does that mean, that they sanctioned you?
Well, I can't travel in the EU. All my... If I would have money there, it's all frozen, everything I have, and so on.
So you robbed a bank? You killed children? Raped somebody?
I write my mind. I sit at home on the computer and writing articles.
So your crime is your words?
Yes.
You are sanctioned because of your words?
Yes. It's written in the sanction list. Because
I don't believe you. You're kidding me, right?
No, and the 7th package in May.
That's worse than the United States.
it's fun. And what you just...
You mean, let's do this one more time. Yeah. I just want to make sure people understand what we just said. You, as a human being, Thomas Roper, have been told by your country that you are officially sanctioned, which means what? You could go to jail?
No, jail would be another topic, but no, I can't travel to Germany. I'm not allowed to enter the EU, which means I'm also on the no-fly list in the EU. So if I want to go to Germany, I have to, like swimming through the Baltic Sea.
You can't return to your own country?
No. Only on a ship through the Baltic Sea, if I would like to.
What about your assets?
Well, they would be frozen, if I would have some there. I don't have them.
So if you had money in the bank, they'd just take it?
Yeah.
God, that's crazy.
That's crazy, but...
This is the free world.
Yeah, this is freedom.
Yeah, that's freedom.
So it's
that's the free world that's doing this.
Yeah.
And we're over here in the unfree world.
I always say, I'm living in dictatorship, and it's fine for me. but, you know, that's what you mentioned. You said it's an asset for Germany that they have the U.S. as a friend and the EU. I think it's vice versa. They are the problem of Germany's economy. They are sanctioned now, EU sanctioned the pipeline Nord Stream 2. Which would be a chance for Germany to get cheap gas. Sanctioned.
Yeah.
So the EU is the problem of Germany because the German industry worked only because of cheap energy.
Yeah.
They cut it up themselves, telling the people Putin did it, and then the last pipeline, they sanctioned.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, the idea that... Here's the problem with, I think, Germany, United States, Great Britain, a lot of these Western countries, they've stopped caring about the interests of their people.
Absolutely.
And started caring about other interests.
Absolutely.
And there's no better example than the one you just cited. The idea that it makes sense that if this... Sorry for using your cup. Your cup is Germany. My cup is Russia. And this is the pipeline, right? Can we see this on camera? I don't know if we can see this. This is the pipeline that sends the natural gas from here to here, right? Makes all the sense in the world. Gas. So they, Russia, have allowed the CIA to blow up this pipeline so that cheap, efficient natural gas can't go from here to there anymore. Now it comes from the other side of the world on ships, inefficiently and more costly, and the German people have to pay almost twice as much for it.
Yeah, and the German industry is
that makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it?
All the sense in the world. but that's the point. They don't think about the interests of the people. Look what they just said in France. They now absolutely stop any increase of social payments because they need the money for weapons. Well, I asked my readers, of course, okay, they are my readers, so some of they share my opinion, but I asked, I made a poll and said, hey, what is more important for you? Good medicines, medical system, a good education, and so on, or more weapons?
Yeah.
And of course, but if you would ask this question in that simple way, all the Europeans would say, hey, what do I need tanks for when the schools are going down?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this might be a good opportunity. Guys in the control room, Boris, Gene, Dennis, show the pictures of the protests that are taking place in Ukraine. You know they've been taking place for a while, you know, but there's some new ones now.
I know.
They just restarted
again. Quite an interesting story, by the way, the Nablus
story. Yeah. Well, as we watch those, tell us that story. Go ahead.
Well, this is a long story. It's a story which is connected already with the election in 2016 in the USA. Because NABU was founded by Biden. He was, after the Maidan, he was the, from Obama, the representative for Ukraine.
And NABU is the...
anti-corruption...
Right, the organization that's supposed to stop corruption.
Yeah. This was never the way. It was always controlled by the U.S. Embassy in Kiev.
Huh.
And it was an instrument to fight everybody who's against the U.S. interest in Ukraine. I know people. I had very interesting interviews with the so-called right hand of Poroshenko, the president at that time.
Yeah.
He told me many interesting things about this, so I have quite an insider view. And the thing is, this was, so it was and is an instrument from the West to control Ukraine. Because everybody who they don't like, tomorrow they open a case. And now Zelensky, who is under pressure, took this independent agency under his control. And now we have immediately, from all the Western NGOs organized, protests against it, like Maidan. Now we have all the Western countries saying, hey, that's very bad.
I have a feeling that what you're really trying to say is that this is all bull crap. The protests are probably orchestrated. And this whole thing against Zelensky was set up. He's being set up. They want to replace him with somebody else.
Might be anyway. They don't want to lose this most important instrument of controlling Ukraine. It's the most important instrument.
And the anti-corruption, the NABU.
Yeah, this is very important. And they don't want to lose it. It's their point to control
Ukraine. Fascinating.
And this, this is a long story. But to make the long story short, that's the reason. And you got it right. Of course, this is all orchestrated. I looked it up. There are two NGOs in Ukraine leading this stuff, and they are financed by EU, USA, UK, Netherlands, Soros. So that's where they get their money from. And these are the guys now organizing that more than 60 NGOs get their people on the street.
Yeah.
And they are all financed from the West. Of course, the West doesn't have anything to do with that.
You know, I started my show. I don't know if you got a chance to listen
yes.
to it, because I know you listened to what I was doing. I found a report from a young man who I would not be surprised, and I'm not saying that he is. He has an opportunity. It would be improper for me to accuse him of something that I don't know, much like he does in his stories. But he's doing these stories, and he's presenting a story that isn't true. He's showing bombs hitting empty buildings and not saying they're empty buildings, which I see a lot out of the reporting that comes out of the West and the reporting that comes out of the Ukraine. He's introducing a shopkeeper as a guy who's obviously working for the military. He interviews a guy who says he was in Afghanistan, but he's just a common volunteer. I mean, these are lies. Do you see this as well in the Western media? In Europe, I can only speak for the United States.
Yeah,
I'm not a follower of the BBC or Der Spiegel or any of these places. Mm. You are.
It's absolutely the same.
It's absolutely the same. The Spiegel nearly every day has one article in the morning about the horrible Russian bombing last night and so on. And then, you know, I sometimes just write a small article. So Spiegel says today, Russia bombed Ukraine with 700 drones and rockets. one person injured.
Exactly! I keep seeing that too. I see they say, they dropped, blah, blah, blah. And then I go, okay, so how many people were injured? One man broke his legs running away from the... It's like...
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Gaza, what I read the other day, and I'm not sure, I spoke with Bibi Netanyahu's spokesperson yesterday. I don't know if you saw that interview. A very difficult interview because we were going at each other, although it was respectful. But there are those who say when they finally clear the debris in Gaza, they may find around 400,000 bodies. Right now, they say it's 60,000. I think it's more. But let's just play 60,000. Do you know how many civilians have been killed so far in this war in Ukraine?
Something like 12,000.
13,300.
Yeah.
Which is too many, but come on.
See the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello?
And again, the 60,000 we have, the official figure, these are the lists of the authorities of Gaza. They have all the 60,000 names.
Right.
So what you say, the rest, how many people are bombed down? How many people are already died of hunger? And I agree. Yeah. Even the Lancet some weeks ago wrote at least more than 100,000. Lancet. And,
yeah.
and they wrote, this is conservative.
Right. That's a good question. I'm glad we went there. It seems like, although they aren't turning yet on Ukraine, with the exception of turning maybe a little bit on Zelensky, because now they've just discovered that he was corrupt.
Something new?
Like, oh my gosh, really? No, I'm shocked. There does seem to be a turn against Israel in Europe in some ways. I'm seeing it on the BBC, for example.
Yeah.
Finally, right? Like they just discovered this?
Well, I don't know. This is quite interesting. I think this the initiative where countries like Spain and so on who started recognizing Gaza and criticizing, and I think they have some pressure in Brussels because I have seen reports that the diplomatic staff in Brussels has a problem in the so-called global south because they don't want to talk to the US, EU anymore. Because they're saying, hey, well, these are double standards. What are you doing here? Why are you supporting Israel? So they get a problem in the global south, which they need economically and politically. And that's maybe is the reason because the pressure from there comes. But for example, Germany still is absolutely on the way. Well, just Merz said, well, please, Netanyahu, maybe stop the war. So if you have time, maybe stop the war. You know, it's crazy.
You know what it is. Doesn't it almost seem, and to hear you say it, like they have no backbone, they have no spine. I watched this guy, what's his name, Starmer, in
Britain.
Yeah, the Brit.
Yeah.
He just looks like this weak jelly of a man, like the kind of guy who just cannot stand up for himself. The kind of guy who looks like he was always beat up in high school or something, you know? Like, and the same as Merz. I mean,
Schultz?
We have a word for them in Spanish. We call them babosos.
Uh-huh.
Babosos means the kind of person who can't keep the saliva in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of like, you know, they're lying with the first word that comes out of their mouth. There's just something about them. And the way Trump goes there and just spanks them and they go, hit me harder. Like, and Netanyahu says, you got to do this. Yes, sir, I'm sorry. When did the countries that used to be the biggest countries in the world become a bunch of weak tits?
I can tell you a story. I have quite good...
Don't get me started on Macron, by the way.
No, not this guy. But it's a true story. I know Mr. Rogozin, who was head of Roscosmos and so on, and he was ambassador of Russia at NATO, 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And he told me this story because he said that happened before my eyes. When I came, it was possible to talk with the Europeans, to negotiate, to talk. And then it changed. When we had a discussion with the Europeans, we agreed on something. Then the American entered the room and the agreement was gone. So he said, before his eyes, in his years in Brussels, he saw how this changed, how the Europeans really came under the Americans. And everything you discussed with them, when the Americans come into the room, it was over.
That's terrible.
Yep.
And it's not even, you know, it's funny because... It's funny, you just said the Americans, and we all do this. Like, I will say the Germans, or the French, or the Brits. It's not the people of those countries.
Absolutely.
Americans are really good people.
I know.
They have no idea that some idiots, greedy bastards, are making decisions for the rest of the world in their name, and they're too busy going to work every day to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then you have the CNNs and the NBCs and the Foxes and all these, you know, let me not say that because it's a bad word and I'm not allowed to curse on television, but you have these people who are constantly lying to them.
Yeah.
So they don't know. They just think, oh, okay, Russia bad, China bad, Ukraine good, Germany's great, this, and only the countries who say aye to us are good, no matter what they do. And that's not the truth.
Black and it's never always black and white. But you are right, by the way, what you said, the Americans, the Russians, and so on. I know Russian, and when I see Russian news or even documentaries, even the news from World War II, when they fought the Nazis, even then, the Russians didn't say the Germans. It was always the Nazis, the fascists. So the Russians always divide this. When you see there's no bad word in Russian media about Ukraine, about the government. Also Germany, France, Britain, USA.
Right.
They always say the people there are suffering from the decisions their governments make.
Correct.
So this is, by the way, absolutely right. And the Russians make this separation. They always separate in media and documentaries and, between the people and the government.
And it's not just their words, it's their action. You have to, you know, I'm not here to suck up to Russia, and neither are you. When Russia does something wrong, you're going to criticize it, and I'm going to criticize it too, whether it's Putin or Lavrov or whoever. But the bottom line is, if you look at the actions of the Russian military, they are generally being respectful of the Ukrainian people.
I've been there several times. I have been there as a war correspondent.
That's right, you're a war correspondent.
I can tell you very many stories about that, of course. Well, I've been there. You remember Mariupol when the city was really under fire?
Yeah,
I was there when they were still fighting. I've seen how the Russians give humanitarian aid. I've talked to people who just 1 hour ago left the basements, you know, where they were sitting a month under fire. And they told me these stories, and nobody, of course, I think people are people, maybe there are things, but nobody, when I was 16 times more in that area, nobody told me bad stories about the Russians. The Russians are helping, and so maybe something happens, people are people, but in general, you don't hear bad stories. The Russian soldiers, they are polite there.
And maybe we finish there, because I think what's fascinating is, you know what, Thomas? I was shown pictures of the of Mariupol, and apparently the Russians have gone in there. They've built brand new schools, brand new roads, brand new buildings. Much of the stuff that was knocked down has been redone, and the people there couldn't be happier. And nobody in the West knows this.
Exactly.
They still show you pictures of Mariupol 3 years ago.
I was there. I was there some months ago. It's a new city.
It's a brand new city.
New. All the streets.
That's a story.
I wrote about this all the time.
Yeah.
I've been there in the beginning in 22 when we traveled from Donetsk to Mariupol, like 120 kilometers. It took us 3 hours. So bad were the roads, and not because of war, but because of nobody repaired them. Now you go there less than an hour. It's all the roads are new. It's crazy what they're building there. It's really crazy.
Let me finish with the headline. The news is that it looks like the Russians have captured Chasiv Yar. If that's true, how big do you think that is?
We will see. I'm waiting. The Ukrainian front has to break somehow because they have a really big lack of personnel. Whether it happens in Chasiv Yar or in another place.
Pokrovsk?
Possible. Maybe it happens in Sumy. I don't know. The Russians are making pressure everywhere, and there will be they will find a weak point where they go through. I don't know where, but it will come. I'm quite sure.
You think at this point it's inevitable that the Russians have such a huge advantage? It's like if you and I were playing basketball and I would be up in the 2 minutes left to play and I'm beating you by 50 points. You're not going to win.
Yeah, and then that's the point. The advantage is on the Russian side.
Yeah.
That's the point.
It may not be 2 minutes, but at some point it looks like they're...
It's a question of time.
And it seems like the West is realizing that. All of a sudden the EU is sanctioning Zelensky, and suddenly even Trump is making comments about, you know, the corruption and all the money that's gone. That doesn't happen by accident. If they're criticizing him, what they're really criticizing him is that they're angry that they're losing the war.
Well, that's the point, and the Europeans have to make a decision, because... You can send as many weapons as you want. If there are no hands to take the weapons, you have problems. The problem is, the question will be, and this is always my question, what is now, what will happen? Will Merz, von der Leyen, Macron, and Starmer say, hey, sorry, it's over, we lost, let's go home? Or will they send troops?
Oh, my God. Because let us hope they don't send...
These are the two possibilities.
Yeah, if they send troops, they're starting World War III.
But if they don't send troops, Ukraine will lose. And they have to stand in front of the people and say, we lost. The money is gone. Sorry.
This woman, what is her name? Cruella de Vil? Vanderlyn?
Mm-hmm.
You know who Cruella de Vil is, right? From the 101 Dalmatians?
Yeah. She was
the character.
Yeah.
Sorry. Bad joke. She's fascinating, isn't she? I'm still trying to figure out what she's all about. She's a woman who rules all of Europe. Nobody ever elected her. She had some position in Germany, I guess, before that. And she
always corrupt.
Corrupt?
There were scandals when she was a minister of defense. Hundreds of millions to consultants. The treaties were not given according to the law.
Really?
And the result is she became president of the
And now
the
she's
EU
like
Commission.
She's the president of all of Europe.
Yeah.
She makes decisions and proclamations about who will get money and when they will get it. And then she brings Zelensky over near her and cuddles with him like he was her child, and then tells the world how they need to respect this young man because he's a good guy. And the whole thing is just, it's kind of embarrassing to look at, no?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's my perspective. No, you're German.
It's the same. The problem is this woman knows what she's doing. She comes from a very, very rich family.
Ah.
She was very this is also a long story.
Really?
This is a long story. There was, for example, this back to the 70s. Maybe remember Cold War, we had these communist terrorists in Europe, like in Germany, the RAF.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a case when the RAF placed a bomb near a prison to get out one of their partners.
Right.
Was the official story. Happened end of the 70s. 86 came out. Oh, sorry, it was the German Secret Service. It was state terrorism.
Oh, my God.
And responsible was the Prime Minister of Lower Saxonia, which was the father of von der Leyen. It's her father. So this is the family where she comes from. And, her whole career is in that way. As I said, this case in Germany when she was Minister of Defense, immediately in Europe. The COVID stuff with the vaccinations. Vaccines that they bought at Pfizer with a secret contract. Or like when she came in power, she said, "Yeah, well, we reform the financial system here. We need a consultant because we don't understand anything." Who became the consultant?
Yeah.
BlackRock.
Of course.
BlackRock.
Of course.
Yeah.
So she's crooked.
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? Wow, you've been such a great guest. Thomas Roper.
Thank you very much.
What an opportunity to be able to get a perspective from someone as worldly as yours, as you are. And, you know, it's great. I'm so glad that Natalie reached out to you and had you come here. We really think it's important for us to be able to get guests. We do this every Thursday. We do it right here in front of the Kremlin. And we just get someone who is much smarter than me to have a conversation with. And you proved to be worthy.
I did my best.
No, it's easy. I'm not that smart. Thanks again, Thomas.
Thank you.
We really, really appreciate it. Well, that's it for us. As you know, I also have a podcast. It's called Journalistically Speaking. There's a real good chance that you're going to be seeing Mr. Roper on it as well. You can also look for me on Twitter or X or whatever the hell they call it these days. My handle is RickSanchezTV. And I'll be looking for you there. Thanks so much for being with us on behalf of all of us here, including Natalia and you too, Thomas. We'll look for you next time.